Well, let us turn in our Bibles to the Gospel of John in chapter 10. John's Gospel in chapter 10. Now, if you're visiting North Wales and wondering what to do during your time here, then you may want to think, amongst many things you could do in this area, you may want to think about taking a walk in the mountains. We have some great mountains in this area, and assuming the weather is good, and we've had great weather, I just hope you haven't missed it all, but assuming the weather is good, then you could have a great time exploring the mountains of North Wales. And if you do, you may, on your travels, you may come across something like this. And if you see this on your visit to the mountains, you may be thinking to yourself, why did anyone have the crazy idea of building a house in the middle of the mountains? You may think it's the ruins of a house. Well, the answer is it's not a house, and it never was a house. Instead, it's a sheep pen. And if you're not from Wales, then here's an interesting fact for you. Did you know that there are between two and three as many times sheep in Wales as there are people? There's just over 3 million people, and there's somewhere like 8 million sheep. I haven't gone round counting them, but I did get that fact on the internet. And so sheep farming, as the statistic demonstrates, sheep farming has always been an important part of the economy here, just as it was back in Jesus' day. And what sheep farmers in both our day and Jesus' day did was build sheep pens. They were enclosures, as you can see, and following a day's grazing, the pen would provide the sheep with a place of safety and security and shelter during the hours of darkness. It provided a place of shelter from bad weather. Even in the Middle East, you get bad weather sometimes, and you certainly do here in Wales. But also, and more importantly, it would provide a place of safety and security from wild animals and worse. Now, today, sheep pens tend to be made of metal, but in the past, they were made from stones, just like this one. And they were built about 3 feet, or if you prefer metric, they were built about a meter high. But the vitally important feature of a sheep pen then and today was that there was only one entrance. That's the important thing about a sheep pen. There is only one entrance. And that is the picture Jesus is using as we come to the opening verses of John chapter 10, which leads me to my first point this morning, and that is the danger Jesus highlights. The danger Jesus highlights. Now, although we have the danger Jesus highlights. It's not Lynn that's the danger, don't worry. Slight misunderstanding there. Although we have a clear break in our English Bibles between chapters 9 and 10 of John's Gospel, there was no such break originally. And so we are supposed to continue reading from chapter 9 on into chapter 10. And that's why we did that this morning. The people Jesus is addressing at the start of chapter 10 are the same people he was addressing at the close of chapter 9. And who were they? Well, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, then you may remember that chapter 9 refers to a man who has received his sight both physically and spiritually. But it also featured some religious people, some religious leaders who assumed that they were seeing perfectly well, when in actual fact they were blind, spiritually blind. And by the time we get to the close of that chapter, Jesus is addressing both the man who once was blind but is now seeing. He's addressing him, and at the same time he's addressing the religious leaders who remained stubbornly blind. And it was to that mix of people that Jesus said this, chapter 10, verse 1. I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The watchman opens the gate for them. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Now, in order to picture what Jesus is saying here, we have to transport ourselves geographically from the mountains of North Wales to a first century Middle Eastern village. Because sheep farming was such a big thing in first century times, several households in the village would have had sheep, and so there would have been a big communal sheep pen on the outside of the village, like the one on the screen. You see, it's much bigger than the one you saw in the Welsh mountains. This is a big communal sheep pen. And at the end of each day's grazing out on the fields and on the mountainside, at the end of each day's grazing, the shepherds from the village would bring their sheep down into that communal sheep pen, and between them they would hire a watchman to guard the entrance to the pen during the hours of darkness. In the morning, each of the shepherds would return to the sheep pen, and the watchman would open the gate for the shepherd. The shepherd would go in through the gate, and he would call his sheep by name, and the sheep would follow their particular shepherd out for another day's grazing. But you may remember that I said a few minutes ago that the sheep pen provided safety and security from wild animals and worse. And on hearing that, you may have thought to yourself, worse? What could possibly be worse for the safety and security of the sheep than a wild animal? Well, the answer is wicked people. And we are introduced to them in verse 1. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. Now, thankfully, we are told in verse 5 that the sheep will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. But that does not minimize the fact that there were plenty of strangers who were trying to get sheep that did not belong to them. People who would go to any lengths and every length to obtain sheep, even if that meant climbing over the wall of the sheep pen, as described in verse 1. That's the lengths they would go to in order to steal sheep to get them for themselves. That is the danger that Jesus highlights. And having heard Jesus highlight this danger, you may have assumed that he was addressing a bunch of sheep farmers at the local sheep market on market day. But no. He's addressing those people at the close of chapter 9, including the religious leaders. And why is he telling them about the dangers that sheep face? Well, if you look at verse 6, you will read these words. Jesus used this figure of speech. Although describing a first century sheep farm, a scene from first century sheep farming that most people back then would have been very familiar with, please note, Jesus is not trying to become a security consultant within the sheep farming world. Instead, he is using an illustration. He's using a figure of speech. He is speaking figuratively. But sadly, we are told in verse 6 that they did not understand what he was telling them. And it's a pity they didn't understand, because the reference to the thieves and the robbers and the strangers was a reference to them. Now, the illustration of a shepherd and his sheep goes back a long way in the Bible. For example, it was 1,000 years BC that King David penned those well-known words, "The Lord is my shepherd." It was a common illustration throughout Old Testament times, an illustration in which God's people are portrayed as God's sheep. And throughout Old Testament history, God had sought to provide for his sheep by appointing shepherds to care for them and to feed them. That was the role which the religious leadership within Old Testament Israel was meant to fulfill, to provide and care and protect the sheep. But by the time the prophet Ezekiel arrives on the scene in the 6th century BC, those who were meant to be shepherds within Israel, they were failing miserably in their responsibilities, and worse still, they were abusing their position. And consequently, God said through his prophet Ezekiel, chapter 34, verse 2, "Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not care for the flock. You have not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally." And far from being an isolated case, did you notice what Jesus says in John chapter 10, verse 8? "All that ever came before me were thieves and robbers." And sadly, by the time Jesus arrives on the scene, the religious leaders within Israel were no better than they had been back in Ezekiel's day. And the treatment of that blind man in John chapter 9 was evidence of that. People who were in positions of leadership and authority, people who were meant to be shepherds caring for sheep. And how did they treat him? Chapter 9, verse 34, in response to that man's testimony of what Jesus has just done for him, we read this, these words. "To this we replied, 'You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?' And they threw him out." Threw him out. That is how the religious leadership treated one of God's sheep. It was the religious leaders at the close of chapter 9 that Jesus was taking aim at as he describes the dangers facing the sheep at the start of chapter 10. It was them that he was warning that new believer of. Don't forget that man. He's not only had his eyes open physically, he's had his eyes open spiritually, and he's come to believe in Jesus. He's a young believer, and Jesus is warning that young believer of the dangers presented by those who were supposed to be shepherds, but are thieves and robbers. It was them that he was referring to when he gave that young believer the warning in verse 10 that such people are out to steal and kill and destroy. That is the danger that Jesus highlights. And sadly, his illustration from the world of sheep farming 2,000 years ago continues to be every bit as relevant today. And I say that because there are people out there, and there are organizations out there, and there are ideologies out there that still present a serious danger to God's flock today, i.e. to God's people. Living in a society that prides itself in being tolerant, we might be tempted to think that we are surrounded by people who couldn't care less what we believe or how we live, as long as we don't interfere with them and their beliefs and their lifestyle. And yes, there are a lot of people like that today. They couldn't care less what you believe. They couldn't care less how you live. But not everyone is like that. Not everyone is like that. Within our so-called tolerant society, there are people who vehemently despise what you believe as a Christian and how you live as a Christian, and they will do their utmost to discourage you in your desire to live for Jesus Christ, and they will do their utmost to destroy your faith in Jesus Christ. They will go to all lengths and any lengths to steal you from the flock of God's people and bring you into their secular and atheistic and amoral fold. And if you're a Christian this morning, then you need to be aware of that danger, because that is the danger that Jesus highlights here. As our society becomes increasingly secular, it becomes increasingly less often that you come across someone who says they believe in God and who takes their religion seriously. And therefore, when you do, you can immediately be tempted to think that here is someone that you have something in common with, someone that you can relate to, especially when they seek to reassure you that we all believe much the same thing. For example, I have neighbours at the moment who would describe themselves as being religious. And considering it's a house full of young men, that might come as quite a surprise to you. But when I sought to have a religious conversation with one of them the other day, his opening line was something to the effect that all religions are essentially the same, and therefore we're all effectively believing and saying the same thing. Have you ever heard that sort of stuff? But as the conversation progressed, it turned out that whereas the Bible says there is one God, he believed in thousands of gods. And whereas the Bible says that as creatures it is we who ought to worship the Creator, he believed in worshipping the creation rather than the Creator. And so, contrary to what he tried to tell me at the beginning of the conversation, it soon became apparent that religious people don't all believe the same things. We don't. Religious people believe vastly different things, and believe it or not, such differences can even occur amongst those who identify as Christian. And what you will discover is that most religions today, even the ones that appear to be the most friendly. What you'll discover is that their aims and their agenda is nearly always to draw you away from God's flock and bring you into their fold. That is the danger that Jesus highlights here. And therefore it's a danger that you and I need to be aware of. Moving on, we've seen the danger that Jesus highlights. Secondly, the security that Jesus provides. The security that Jesus provides. Now, from the various things Jesus has mentioned about the sheep pen, Jesus now focuses on one of those features, and that is the entrance to the pen. And from what we're told in verses 1, 2, and 3, first century Middle Eastern sheep pens, it seems, would often have a gate across the entrance. Now, I realise that there are reports of sheep pens that simply had a gap as an entrance, and having got his sheep into the pen for the night, the shepherd himself would sleep in the gap in order to protect his sheep and keep them safe from wild animals and wicked people and so on. Those reports may or may not be true, but regardless of whether they are true, that is not the picture that is presented to us in the opening verses of John chapter 10. The picture here is of a sheep pen which had an actual gate across an entrance. A gate which the night watchman would open and close as required. And as you can appreciate from the illustration, and as you know from everyday life, a gate does two things. Firstly, it provides you with a point of access into your garden or wherever it is you're going. That's your point of access. And secondly, once you've gone through it, it provides you with a measure of safety and security and protection from all that is going on outside the gate. That is why we have a gate between our church car park and our church garden. It provides the children with a measure of safety from the cars in the car park. And it was with those ideas in mind that Jesus issues his next I am statement in John's Gospel. And here it is, verse 7. Therefore Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. Verse 9, I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. Now can you imagine what those words meant for that blind man who had just received his sight in chapter 9. Having just come to faith in Jesus Christ, and having been rejected and thrown out by the religious establishment in the process, that man would need all the reassurance that he could possibly get that it was in Jesus Christ rather than in the religious establishment of his day. He would need the reassurance that it was in Jesus Christ that true salvation and security was to be found. And what greater reassurance could he possibly hope for than to hear Jesus say, I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. In other words, says Jesus, I am the point of access and the means of access into the safety and the security of God's flock. Now that was great news for that young believer back then. And if you are a Christian this morning, then those words continue to be great news for you today. I say that because we live at a time when there is plenty of confusion about who God's people really are and how you can come to belong to the people of God. Just as the blind man of John 9 discovered in his day, there are no shortage of people today who claim that their way, or their religion, or their ideology, or their rules and regulations, or their self-help program of improvement is the point and means of access into the safety and security of belonging to God's people. And it is in the context of all those claims and all that confusion that these words of Jesus continue to ring out with as much relevance today as they did when he first spoke them. I am the gate for the sheep. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. Saved. Not only from those thieves and robbers that we thought about a few minutes ago, but more importantly still, saved from the righteous judgment of God that we fully deserve as a result of our sin. I am the gate, says Jesus. Whoever enters through me will be saved. Rescued from the frightening judgment of God. And therefore, if you are someone who is trusting in Jesus Christ this morning, and yet surrounded by all sorts of confusion, then can I reassure you on the authority of Jesus' words, that in coming to faith in Jesus Christ, you have gone through the gate that provides access to the people of God, and in doing so, you now enjoy all the safety and security and salvation that comes with belonging to God's flock. And if you're not a Christian this morning, or if you're not sure what it really means to be a Christian, then can I remind you that one vital feature of a first century sheep pen was that there only was one entrance. And therefore, when Jesus says that he is the gate, he was not offering himself as one of many means of access into the safety and security of God's flock. He wasn't saying that he was the main gate into God's flock, but if you prefer, then there was always another side gate that you could enter through instead. No. Central to Jesus' claim to be the gate is the fact that there is only one gate into the safety and security of God's flock. And Jesus is saying that he is it. And therefore, if you want to belong to God's people this morning, and if you long to know the safety and security and salvation that comes with being his people, then can I remind you that the only point of access and the only means of access to God's flock is Jesus Christ. He's the only means of access. Because for you and I to be acceptable to God and to become one of his people, something needs to be dealt with. And that is the problem of our sin. A holy God cannot turn a blind eye to our sin. He cannot say, yeah, look, I know you're a sinner, but whatever. Just come in, just come along regardless. No, a holy God cannot do that. But the great news this morning is that the holy and the eternal God has done everything that is necessary to make sinners like you and me acceptable to him. He has sent his son, Jesus Christ, and in his death upon the cross, Jesus took the penalty and the punishment which sinners like you and me fully and totally deserve. And through trusting in what Jesus has accomplished, in his life, in his death, and in his resurrection, you and I can have our sins forgiven and be made perfectly acceptable to a holy God. Being the only sinless person who has ever lived, Jesus is the only person in the history of our world who could die for the sins of others. He is the only person who can make guilty sinners acceptable to a holy God. And that is why he is the gate, and the only gate, by which you and I can enter into the safety and the security and the salvation that is enjoyed by the people of God. That's why you need to turn from your sin and trust in him. No one else. Him. Or to use the illustration of the sheep pen, that is why you need to enter through him. And if you do so, you will not only find the eternal security that comes with being one of his flock, you will also know the true satisfaction that comes with being one of his flock. Did you hear what Jesus went on to say in verses 9 and 10? I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. And so just as the gate of the first century sheep pen was the means by which sheep both entered the pen for their nightly security and exited it for their daily nourishment, nourishment which was required if needs were going to be satisfied, so Jesus is claiming to be the means by which his followers